It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Urban blight is on the rise in southwestern Pennsylvania, costing taxpayers nearly $400,000 a year and creating a host of other problems. Whether it's Homewood or Allentown, vacant properties are abundant in the region, driving down property values and creating potential safe havens for criminal activity. Today, we're taking an in-depth look at the issues associated with blight and its impact in and around Pittsburgh. Later, we'll look at some possible solutions. But first, joining me in studio is Bethany Davidson. She is the Neighborhood Policy Director of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. Bethany Davidson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
And with us by phone is Liz Hirsch. She's Executive Director of the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania. Liz Hirsch, hello.
Hi.
And you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Liz Hirsch, let's begin by having you give us a snapshot of blight in Pennsylvania. Where are there larger concentrations of vacant properties causing blight?
Well, Pittsburgh and Philly have the greatest concentrations of blighted property. There's between 16 and 20,000 here in Pittsburgh and about 40,000 that have been counted in Philadelphia, and that includes buildings and vacant lots. But blight and vacancy and abandonment are statewide. It's a rural problem. It's a small city and a small town problem as well. There's an estimated 300,000 vacant properties in Pennsylvania. There's never been a statewide inventory, so that's a proxy that comes from the census. But it's a problem in communities throughout the state. Because we're an old state, we've had a lot of changes in industry and we've had a lot of population loss over the years, and a lack of reinvestment and a lack of policy to encourage or incentivize reuse of old properties. And so that's what has driven us to this point where we have quite a bit of blighted property throughout the state.
Bethany, you do a lot of work with the Vacant Property Working Group. Tell us about the organization and what you're trying to do in the greater Pittsburgh area to deal with blight.
Sure. The Vacant Property Working Group, or VPWG, falls under the parent organization of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. But what VPWG tries to do is it brings nonprofit community-based organizations and its partners together to try and revitalize. The mission is to revitalize all land in the greater Pittsburgh area. And it really focuses on doing that through policy-related solutions as well as programmatic. So gaining site access. Sometimes that means site control, sometimes it doesn't, to be able to activate blighted and abandoned properties throughout our communities.
And what have been the most effective programs that you've created in Pittsburgh to combat blight and issues with vacant properties?
Over the years, about 20 years ago, the Vacant Property Working Group worked very closely with the City of Pittsburgh and created a pathway to land access by using a tax foreclosure mechanism, or the treasurer sale process. So we engage in land recycling activities. Part of that, through that, a sub-program called the Side Yard Sale Program, which allows homeowners to take stewardship and ownership of the vacant lot next door and then become care for that lot as well and eliminate blight, as well as add to their property values and hopefully increase their quality of life, has been another really successful program. Both have been in existence for a while. And then more recently, really concerted efforts around both at the state level around land bank legislation. We saw that pass in the City of Pittsburgh and was signed into law early last year. So we're looking forward to the implementation of that policy and program, as well as working on in parallel on code enforcement programs.
And what neighborhoods in Pittsburgh need the most assistance, and how have they gotten to be in the condition that they're in?
Certainly. I would say that, much like Liz mentioned, blight is a common denominator. It affects every neighborhood, certainly to different extents. But blight has a lot of different root causes as well as manifestations. So there are legal, financial, and physical impacts of blight. So it really depends on which piece you're looking at, and ideally you have to interact with all three of them, which makes it a more complicated issue, but you also want your interventions to be matched with what you're trying to address. In terms of those root causes, I have this map up in my office, and it's or set of maps, and it's one of my favorite is a bit of an overstatement, but it's a good reminder about how sort of entrenched this issue and this problem is in Pennsylvania and in other areas across the country, for sure. I have this map from the 1930s of Pittsburgh, and it's a community reinvestment map. And it basically was a map that the federal government broke the city down into four areas. A lot of people refer to it as the sort of one of the original redlining maps, where it showed where markets were strong and increasing and where the federal government and financial institutions could or should make more investment. And then it showed areas up from 1 through 4 in terms of strength, all the way down to where investment should not happen because the markets were already declining. And you can overlay that map with sort of a quote blight map, whether that's tax delinquency or code issues or some of the different indicators that go into blight here in 2015. And you can almost see a direct overlap 85 years later. So decisions that were made at the federal level 85 years ago, we're still working on seeing the impacts of and working on course correcting 85 years later.
And we spoke earlier this week with Evane Singh from GTEC. She mentioned a big issue with vacant properties in the region are Pennsylvania's strict property rights laws. Can you explain what these laws have meant for Pittsburgh?
What they've meant for Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Are people like you hamstrung when it comes to trying to go in and deal with these problems because of these laws?
Certainly. So these are state laws. Mm-hmm. In Pittsburgh, part of the challenge is that as much as we want to do, unless we have different state laws or state law changes, potentially we can't necessarily, quote, do more. And some of that is property rights are very strongly protected at the state and local level. But the enforcement of the responsibility of property ownership isn't as able to be enforced as strongly. And because of that, just to your question and your comment, we are hamstrung. There's only so much you can do to interact with a privately owned property because it's protected by state law.
So, Liz Hirsch, why are the state laws this way? Why have they not been changed?
Well, a lot of them actually have been changed. So there's the law, and then there's how it is applied. The history, I think, around blighted and abandoned property, I think it's been a sort of an issue of benign neglect, certainly neglect. I think it's really only recently, probably in the last 10 to 12 years, that they've really been able to connect the dots between antiquated laws and blighted property. For example, Bethany mentioned tax foreclosure. You know, the tax sale laws in Pennsylvania were passed in 1923 when the state was still growing, and they never anticipated a day when revenue collection would be at odds, in some cases, with the needs and interests of the community as it relates to that property. But that's essentially what's happened. The idea, when those laws were passed, nobody ever envisioned a day where there would be economic benefit for someone to walk away from their property and leave it behind. So that's one example of very antiquated laws. So what we've been doing since 2002 is we've been systematically trying to work our way through these laws and fix them, modernize them. We published a report at that time called Reclaiming Abandoned Pennsylvania, where we identified a number of places where antiquated state laws were making it very hard for local communities to acquire and dispose of a blighted and abandoned property, or to be able to enforce a property maintenance code. And there have been some great strides. You now have the ability, the municipality has the ability now, for example, to move to criminalization of code avoidance. It actually is a crime. If you have the same code violation that's unabated, you can become a criminal offense. We now have the ability to attach the private assets of an owner. Let's say someone owns a really nice set of properties outside the city, but they're letting their properties in the city go to rack and ruin. You can, if you follow a legal process now, attach their private assets. You can deny them another property permit so that they don't spread their blight. You can even extradite people from out of state, and that has actually been done in some cases. But these are instances where the local enforcement has to also take place. You have to actually have a rental registration or a vacant property registration. You have to inspect on a regular basis. You have to use a system where you educate people about the code and then enforce it going forward. And for those who don't comply, if they can't, obviously you help them, but if they can, that they have to be, you know, called to account up to and including blight court. And what we found in Philadelphia when this was done systematically and the codes were enforced is that people, that property values in the adjacent properties went up by, the home sale prices went up by 32%. So there has been progress on in creating kind of a regulatory framework at the state that I think has made some progress in terms of rebalancing property responsibility with property rights. Because we don't want to give up property rights. That's very important. We don't want the state seizing people's properties for no good reason. There need to be protections. But the responsibilities need to be upheld. And the other piece is local communities have to have tools to be able to repurpose the land. And that's where things like having a land bank really is critical so you can get that property back onto market so someone who wants to do something with it can, and has the ability to get hold of it.
And I want to get into land banking, and we're running low on time here. It's Essential Pittsburgh. We're talking about issues of urban blight. Particularly in this area in Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania with Bethany Davidson, Neighborhood Policy Director of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group, and also Liz Hirsch. She's Executive Director of the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania. Liz, you mentioned a land bank being the possible solution here. What is, just for people that don't know, define for us what a land bank is and how it's being used or potentially could be used to combat vacant properties and blight in Pennsylvania.
Right. It's not the solution. It's a piece of the puzzle. There's no silver bullet, unfortunately. A land bank is a publicly created entity whose sole purpose is to acquire vacant, blighted, and abandoned land, clear title, clear all the old tax liens off it, and put it back onto market in such a way that an interested party can use it for a new purpose, whether it's stormwater management, gardens, recreational, new homes, commercial, whatever the case may be. But that is the purpose of a land bank. And it is different from a redevelopment authority. It's complementary. It's kind of an update. And it has new powers that enable the repurposing of land, given kind of these modern realities. We do have a land bank that's been established in Pittsburgh. It's really still in the formative stages. And there are 8 land banks around Pennsylvania, all in the very formative stages. And I think Bethany explains that these are very old problems, and they're intransigent, and they take a lot of effort to right the ship.
Right, and I want to let Bethany talk about land banking and what that policy with land banking in place, what you hope that might be able to do for Pittsburgh.
Sure. And I just to add and build off of what Liz had said, I once had a land bank, was in a room where a land bank was described as a washing machine. I think that's a really good metaphor. A washing machine for land. It essentially cleans it. It cleans off the legal entanglements, the financial challenges, and the physical issues that are on top of the land. And it does all three. It doesn't necessarily say what happens next. It doesn't say, doesn't fold it, it doesn't sort it and put it away. It just washes the land and gets it ready for whatever's next. And I thought that was a really good metaphor to describe how a land bank would interact with the land. In Pittsburgh, Liz also already mentioned some of the statistics for the city. We know that we have about 27,000 vacant and or distressed and other physical or economically distressed lots and 8,000 structures. And a land bank can interact with both land and structures. So it can take that land and hold it. So we have a known point of contact. There's a parcel across, a piece of land across the street from me or next door or down the street, and whether I want to do something with it or not, there's a problem on it. Now I know who I can call to have that that issue addressed. And for some pieces of land, depending on where they are, and if there's a known end user with a known plan, that property may be turned back into a sort of productive use in a shorter time frame, or it might be held in the land bank ownership for a longer period of time, but at least there's a steward who is ultimately responsible for the maintenance and management and just the blight reduction and hopefully eventually elimination in the meantime. So all the land may not be activated for a final end use, be that a park, a greenway, a home, a small business, but at least it is ideally no longer contributing to blight and negative impacts in the community.
We're down to just about 30 seconds or so, so it's probably not fair to bring this question up at this point, but it would be a good note to end on, and that would be, Bethany, what do you think needs to be the biggest change in Pittsburgh to combat blight? If land banking isn't the panacea, if it's a solution but not the solution, as Liz Hirsch just said, then what else needs to happen?
Yeah, land recycling and land banking is certainly one large piece of the puzzle, but just one piece. I would also add that continued investment and commitment to code enforcement with those supportive programs that keep the provisions to help homeowners that are struggling in place. I would put those three pieces together.
I wish we had more time, but we have come to time for this segment in the program. I want to thank our guests, Bethany Davidson, Neighborhood Policy Director of the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group, and Liz Hirsch, Executive Director of the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania. Thank you both for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Coming up, we'll look at creative ways a couple of Pittsburgh neighborhoods are dealing with blight. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.